Hello all sentient beings and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we review Transformers War for Cybertron Siege Episodes 1 through 3. Titan Master Attack comes to the Transformers trading card game, and Chris Ryell is gone from IDW. Today is Friday, July 31st, 2020, and this is episode 192 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that knows this isn't the podcast we imagined, but it's a podcast worth fighting for. I'm your host Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, how's it going?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hey, how are you? Let's talk Transformers.
All right, as always, we start off the show by thanking our Donatrions, those lovely people who give us money on Patreon and PayPal and help us keep the show going. Thank you so much for your support. And if you would like to become a Donatrion, if you're not already, just go to transmissionspodcast.com/support. And there you'll find links to sign up for either Patreon or PayPal. You can also help us out by buying merchandise from our TeePublic store. That is at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. You can also check out K-Girl's store at teepublic.com/user/superstarK. And there you can get some awesome shirt designs and masks. You can get all the Transmissions designs through our store, and anything you buy through TeePublic, from TeePublic, through our link, transmissionspodcast.com/shop, will help out the show. So we appreciate your support. We've got the next episode of Empire of Rust, episode 29, Pornos and Penetration? I have some questions for Mike. So episode 29 will be out this Monday, August 3rd, and it should come straight to your main podcast feed. If you are not already subscribed to that feed, just go to transmissionspodcast.com/rust, and there you will find all the Empire of Rust episodes. We also have our interview with War for Cybertron showrunner F.J. DeSanto. That came out on Monday of this week, and it's Friday, so the Netflix show is already out. It came out yesterday, so you should already have watched it by now. Hopefully you enjoyed it. You binged it pretty quickly. And we've got a spoiler-free review that's up on our YouTube channel and also in our podcast feed. We're also going to do some spoiler-ish discussions right here in Alt Mode this week, so stay tuned for that. Hopefully you've all watched at least watched the first three episodes before you listen to our review. But you can listen to the spoiler-free review right now and enjoy, and then come back and listen to the spoilers. But before we get into all that and that review, we're going to start off the show by talking about some comics news. All right. First up, the big news is that Chris Ryell is gone from IDW again. He is stepping down. He will no longer be president, publisher, and chief creative officer. He is moving on to do his own publishing venture. He will still be involved with Lock and Key, so the Netflix show and other projects with IDW.
He is retaining, like, I guess, editing responsibilities on any Lock and Key projects.
Yes.
That's so weird.
So yeah, I mean, this comes when did he first leave? He left IDW, what was it, a couple years ago, and then he went to Skybound Entertainment, then went back to IDW. Mm-hmm. And that's in, like, it was just within the space of 6 months, and then and now this is maybe like a year and a half later he's leaving IDW again. So
this guy's got commitment issues.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later, but it made the IDW Comic-Con at Home panel a little awkward, knowing that it was pre-recorded before this announcement was made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So We wish Chris Ryle luck. I mean, we've had him on the show before, and he's shepherded the Transformers licensed property for a long time when they first got the license from Hasbro and IDW after the whole Dreamwave implosion. That was a long time ago. So we appreciate all the work he did to help us continue to get more Transformers comics. And so hope he finds success in his new venture, and maybe that will eventually lead him back to IDW again. Who knows? In the wake of Chris Ryle leaving, they had some shakeups in IDW management. IDW Media Holdings has a new CEO, Ezra Rosensaft, and Chief Accounting Officer, Brooke Feinstein. And then in IDW Publishing, the new president at IDW Publishing is Jerry Bennington. The publisher is Judd Myers. And then the general manager and executive vice president of operations is Rebecca Cahillan. So I guess these are all... It takes more than one person to replace Chris Ryle and all his duties at IDW. Well, so
he had multiple jobs. So
yes.
I feel more confident having them split out to different people.
Yeah.
Although there's no chief creative officer.
Yeah. So, I guess there's enough creativity at IDW that they don't need someone. I mean, I don't know what the duties of the chief creative officer are, just to spearhead new projects. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, maybe that's something that John Barber will take some of. Maybe the new publisher Judd Myers will take some of them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's the shakeups at IDW. Taking it back to Transformers Comics, we've got the line art for the covers for issue 21, and these were posted up by both Casey Collar and Phil Murphy. So they each showed off the line art for their covers, which is very cool. You can take a look at that. The links are mirrored at TFW 2005, but I think they put these up on their respective Twitters. And it's always nice to see the line art for covers and, you know, get a sense of how they come together. We've also got some new exclusive variant covers for Transformers 84, Secrets and Lies. This is issue 2, and this is the East Side Comics variant covers. So this, I think, we had a couple of these from issue 1, and now this is continuing with issue 2. And this is the same artist, John Jiang. And I'm at a loss. I think the Decepticon is Soundwave, but I don't know who the Autobot character is. Do you guys know who that is?
Grimlock, maybe?
No, that's a good guess. Yeah, I don't. They are very stylized, yeah. So they don't look very G1-ish. Yeah. Looking at these faces here. But this is in line with the Optimus Prime and Megatron that East Side Comics and John Jiang did for issue 1.
Also, this looks like it's just the art that they're putting up. These aren't the covers because the images are too, like, big. I wonder if East Side Comics has
They were wraparound covers.
Oh, yeah?
Or maybe this is just the full art. And
I don't know. Interesting.
Or it could be cropped because these are kind of square.
Could be.
Well, I think we have some time to figure this out when the issue is probably coming in a few weeks. But I don't think any of us were fans of these variants. But these are the retailer exclusive from East Side Comics. So if you like that style,
the art itself, you know, I can appreciate that. It's just for such an 80s book, I wanted to reflect that.
Yeah. Last bit of news is solicitations for October 2020. So nothing really surprising. We've got Transformers number 24, Transformers Galaxies number 12, and I think that is part 3 of the Ultra Magnus storyline, written by Brandon Easton and art by Andrew Griffith. Then we've got the Transformers IDW Collection Phase 2, Volume 12, and this collects Transformers, this is post Robots in Disguise Transformers issues 51 through 57. That is the All Hail Optimus story arc. Then Transformers Till All Are One issues 1 through 4, Titans Return number 1, and Transformers More Than Meets the Eye issues 56 and 57. This particular volume might have our Transmissions cover as one of the cover images, since we had that commissioned for Till All Are One, number one. That's cool. But yeah, if you missed out on the IDW comics in the last few years and you're collecting these bigger volumes to get the whole story, this one, I mean, this starts Till All Are One. Till All Are One was one of our favorite series that was out for just a year. And you've got the first story arc for that there. And the last book coming out in October, and we've talked about it already, the Transformers Back to the Future crossover issue number one, that has been solicited for October. We already knew that, but we now have the writer is Kevin Scott, when the artist is Juan Samu. And not a whole lot of information about what's going to happen in this book, but we're all looking forward to it. Hopefully we can also get the figure in October. Maybe. We'll see. Hopefully not through Walmart. All right, and that's all the comics news, so we will move on to our review. Okay, this week we are going to review the first three episodes of Transformers War for Cybertron Siege, the new Netflix show. We've already, you should have already heard our interview with FJ DeSanto, the showrunner, and we did our spoiler-free review already, but now we are going to go in depth and talk about these first three episodes and what we thought. All right, Jeremy, lead us through.
This is not going to be like our normal comic reviews and stuff. We're just going to kind of hit high points, but it's completely spoiler heavy. So if you don't want to know about it, if you haven't watched it yet, come back after you have. So that was your warning. Episode one, it starts out just like G1 with Bumblebee and Wheeljack. And I thought that was a neat little touch. They're looking for Energon, although Bumblebee is not an Autobot. And I think we had seen in the trailers he didn't have an Autobot logo, and people were wondering. And I've been like watching YouTube channels for people that are doing kind of theories and stuff after having already seen all the episodes, and just kind of laughing at like how wrong some of these are. Someone speculated that Bumblebee was a bounty hunter and stuff, but he's basically just an Energon scavenger and kind of working in the black markets and stuff. Bumblebee leads Wheeljack to this place where he had found some Energon, and it's actually an abandoned space bridge that Wheeljack just goes crazy about. He's like, this can change the war. And he starts fiddling with it, and he kind of activates it a little bit, and Bumblebee goes nuts, and that draws attention of the Seekers, which are led by Jetfire, which kind of surprising at first that he was leading the Seekers, but it was a neat confrontation, although Jetfire shows right off the bat that he is an honorable character, and he slices off Starscream's arm at one point. And I love the dynamic, because in G1, you know, they have that relationship in the past, and here they still have a relationship, but it's different. So at that point, a Megatron shows up, and, you know, he's basically going to order them to kill the two Autobots. And there's like a running gag through the first little bit of this episode where like Bumblebee's like, I'm not an Autobot. But before they could do anything, Optimus shows up, and you get the fight that's you see part of it in the trailer. I feel like the first fight is a bit clumsy. Just, it's like a fist fight. And it just, like, compared to some of the stuff we get later, where they're using blasters and stuff, it just, I've always seen like a fist fight, even in the live action movies, between two robots that have blasters and stuff. It just is always a little awkward to me. And then the Optimus and Wheeljack and Bumblebee get away when Alita 1 covers them as a sniper. I really like how they've introduced her. And they make it like all the Autobots get away to the Ark. And you see that they've kind of hidden the Ark with some cloaking technology. And just the color shift was just kind of really amazing, because you go from like the grays of Cybertron to this, your classic gold interior of the Ark. And you see so many repaints that are just dead or damaged. You see a bit of that in the trailer where you're like, oh, no, is Hound dead? And no, it's just a repaint. budget, you know, you can't have a bunch of different models. But we see Magnus, we see Optimus, Alita, Chromia. I mean, a lot of the main characters you kind of are introduced here. But the Autobots are in such a bad spot. Just, they are not winning this war. And I like the voice on Magnus. He's very, it still has gravitas, but it's very defeated. He is not on board with Optimus's plans. And then at the end of the episode, he turns himself into the Decepticons and surrenders himself. He walks up with this disguise. No one can tell who he is. He's got this cloak over his head and his collar area, but it's clearly Ultra Magnus. But anyway, so that's episode one, kind of in a nutshell. Hopefully I kind of sparked some memories with you guys. And what were your thoughts on this episode? And, you know, you have any points you want to bring up?
I thought this, it felt just a little, like it started off just a little bit slow. Like we did get a lot of exposition at the beginning. Like you get the interplay between Megatron and Optimus. But I did like how it set the stage. They talk about how there's a treaty that they, you know, there. So, you know, you get the sense that it's been a long war, but there's still a possibility for, you know, I mean, I think the treaty is really Megatron wants Prime to surrender the Autobots just right. to end.
That's essentially what it is.
Yeah. But, you know, but it's still not, he's not to the point where he's ready to exterminate all the Autobots. He still feels like he wants to unify Cybertron. Of course, unify everyone under Megatron. But, you know, he's not at the point where it's destroy all the Autobots, but he'll get there. I did really like Bumblebee and Wheeljack being the first characters you're introduced to. That was very reminiscent of the G1 More Than Meets the Eye, the first episode there. All we needed was some conductor rods for them to find. But I like that. I like Bumblebee being not an Autobot, being a neutral character. So you get to see his perspective on both the Autobots and the Decepticons. So I thought that was cool. And then I was surprised.
I think he's kind of the point of view character.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing Ultra Magnus and a lot of the Autobots, or Ultra Magnus and Alita One in particular, both not being all that confident in Optimus Prime's strategy. So I did think that was an interesting thing. So yeah, and Ultra Magnus was not fooling anybody in that cloak.
Yeah,
I thought it was a bit of a slow start, but I was pulled in this first episode.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed with Megatron, like he's kind of slow through the entire series in terms of how he talks, but it seems to me more deliberate. Like he's very in control of himself and everything immediately around him. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like a purposeful, he's making you wait on the next thing he says.
Yep.
All right, Daryl.
I was kind of taken aback by the fact that Bumblebee wasn't affiliated with anybody. I know that in the comics he's aligned with the Decepticons right now, but I think that'll change soon. But
I think it has changed. He just hasn't changed.
Oh, well, there you go. He was aligned. Anyway, and then obviously he's a career Autobot, but in the, you know, he hasn't really, you know, settled on anybody in this at the start of this show. So when you see him, I'm kind of, how is Bumblebee of any of all of them the wishy-washy one here? I like the idea of him being a scout. Obviously, that's his deal. I do like the fact that he's kind of this Energon sniffer, like a truffle sniffer. He's out there looking for Energon. When the Seekers kind of get the jump on him at the space bridge, and Jetfire's just had enough of Starscream and cuts his arm off, I was like, okay, this is cool. Obviously, they can fix each other. You never saw that in the cartoon, like, you know, somebody taking a piece off of somebody else.
The stakes are set.
Yeah, he's like, all right, he's going to fuck him up. and you can see that Starscream's just being Starscream and he's being an absolute dick. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I can appreciate that. Now, when Megatron shows up, I was, that's kind of when my like praise of the Megatron voice actor, Jason Marnosa, kind of come in, because it's just an evil Megatron. He's not kind of, it's beyond doing it for any kind of good here. He's all about taking over now, and he's going to do it, and it's going to be his world. And it's he doesn't want to compromise anymore. It's just my way or the highway kind of deal. And I know we talked about it a little bit more on the spoiler free review, but the lack of characters really does start to, you know, it's evident right off the hop when the show starts. There's the population of the planet is like nil. You expect to see more bots, but you know, because of the cost of production, I know, yeah. You know, anybody that kind of knows how things work, how cartoons are made nowadays, knows that why it's done. But, you know, I watched the show with my daughter and she doesn't know. She doesn't know why there's nobody there. That's, you just kind of have to tell her. You can't afford to put everybody in it. So like that kind of bugged me. Also the reuse of the models for like the damaged and dead, that kind of bothered me as well. But yeah, no, I did like the episode quite a lot. Introduction of Magnus being, you know, straight laced is just, you know, he wants to do everything to be by the book as well, but he knows that something needs to be done to kind of, he's trying to extend some kind of an olive branch, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to work, right? He's trying to appeal to Prime's the ability to kind of still talk this through, and Prime's not having any of it because Prime knows what's going on. But he still...
Well, I mean, Magnus is seeing everyone is just going to die if they keep fighting.
Yes.
And Optimus is like, everyone's going to die if we surrender.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I thought it was a great start. I really did. And, obviously the couple little, you know, things that I tweak on, but it was a great start for this show.
Episode 2, in my notes here, first thing I wrote for episode 2 was Seekers. So many Seekers. many of them don't get named. I think only your traditional three get really name dropped at all in the series. We get a good example of Starscream's personality in this episode. As Magnus has walked up and dispatches with, I think it was a Seeker that attacked him, Barricade takes aim and shoots, and Magnus doesn't even flinch, and the shot goes like right over his shoulder. So I wrote down Barricade has stormtrooper aim. Magnus and Megatron are sitting at a table, kind of discussing their past. It kind of gets into a little bit of their history. We don't see it, but before the war, apparently they were friends, comrades, something. They were on the same side, and then something happened that caused the split, and we don't get that event, but it goes a long way in kind of building a history to these characters. But Magnus is put in a cell, and we get our first appearance of Shockwave. In the trailer, I didn't really like Shockwave's voice, but I quickly got used to it in the show. It's not a Corey Burton impression, but I thought it was sinister, kind of like Tarantulas in Beast Wars. He is very much Shockwave. He's got secret projects, and he will be later on torturing Magnus. But they're mentioning the Allspark. I really like that some of these things that kind of like the Allspark are talked about more like they're mythical than actual history at this point. That's, you know, it's like when we're talking about something like Stonehenge, we have no idea why it was actually built. So we just can only speculate. And the Allspark is kind of at that age, I think, with them, where the average person probably has only heard stories about it. They didn't disable Magnus's communications before putting him in the cell. So as he's watching them through the little window discussing their plan, he contacts Optimus and kind of told them everything. But of course, enter Soundwave, who noticed that there is a communication leaving, and so Soundwave fakes Magnus's voice and kind of sends the Autobots on a wild goose chase. I think it was to get the AllSpark, but it was a fake. There was nothing there. I think it was for some Energon or something. I can't remember. What ultimately was there was some like highly concentrated Energon. Mm-hmm. It was a setup. There was like Decepticons kind of hiding and waiting. We get to see Impactor, who is a Decepticon. Alita One is on point with all of her observations. Like, this is clearly a trap. She's constantly throughout the series trying to basically get Optimus to stop and see the big picture, because he is very focused in on his one mission with getting the AllSpark and all that. At this point, I also kind of wrote down, why all the walking? There is so much walking, and all of these characters turn into things with wheels. But it's obviously money. We understand. But there is a big fight here. I really, like I mentioned earlier, I like the fights with, you know, where they have the blasters and stuff. We see Mirage. We see Hound. Mirage makes use of his... is it in this fight that he makes use of his hologram gimmick? Was that... I think that was the next episode.
I don't remember.
The Autobot Impact or Cog gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
And like a huge hunk of his midsection is gone.
That's great.
The Autobots make their escape with Cog on the back of Optimus Prime's vehicle mode, because they can transform. And Impactor is about to lead the charge after them when a piece of a building falls and flattens them, and kind of he gets impaled on some rods. At the end of the episode, we see Ravage has recovered Impactor's hand, so they assume he's dead. So we get our first kind of big taste of action in this episode, and seeing more of the characterization, particularly, I think Alita One got a lot of focus in this episode. And I like that not everyone is on board with everything Optimus wants to do. There are like more than just Alita that are questioning him, but ultimately they follow him, even though he just clearly falls for Soundwave's trick. I thought the whispering in the Decepticon headquarters really got old. It's just kind of the volume level that they talk at. It's very quiet, and it's very intentional, it seems like, but it got old to me. But again, I thought this was we had our initial setup in the last episode, and this one really kind of gets in some of the action, and they're not wasting time. So Daryl, let's start with you this time. What did you think?
It was another good episode. I thought I enjoyed the battle
Impactor.
What's his nuts got his abdomen blown out?
A Cog.
Right. When Cog got blowed up, I thought that was great. I was like, holy crap, they damaged somebody. So yeah, I thought that was really good. And then the fact that, you're left thinking that Impactor's dead. Like, they just...
I mean, yeah, he's got a rod, like a steel rod going through his chest. Yeah,
like, they killed him. He is dead. Like, all right, cool. Like, all right, what's... now what? And, you know, like, they're killing characters here. Okay. I love it. You know, it's dark. This is definitely, not a regular Transformers cartoon. So yeah, no, I love the action in this one. The fact that Magnus got captured, and you know, I'm like, okay, this was easy. I mean, you're an idiot for going over there and getting captured. The fact that they left, he left his his radio or whatever, or didn't block the signal. I mean, that should be step one in taking a prisoner for Transformers. Like,
right.
They all have radios. Although, so.
It could have been deliberate. Soundwave probably knew that.
Could have been.
You know, they would be able to, because Megatron mentions that this was a hidden frequency that.
Oh yeah, Magnus sure, was using. Sure, yeah. It's in this episode though that it really starts to stand out to me. Like, who was it that took Cog on his alt mode?
Prime.
Right. So, it's it. we finally, at this point, had seen a transformation. So I was like, okay, Prime transformed and Cog's hanging out with him. Okay, where are the rest of the transformations? You know, and you've mentioned all the walking. So it started to stand out to me here that we weren't going to see a lot of transformations, or hadn't up until this point. Yeah, I was starting to notice that. But all in all, I was enjoying it. I was enjoying the battling. I was enjoying the fighting. The story was moving along at a good clip. Yeah, I was pretty happy with it.
And with the transformation, we do get the sound, the classic
we do.
Transformation yep. sound. I think we mentioned it in our spoiler-free review. A lot of those were kind of off screen. So you hear the sound, and then you see someone in their different
That's
mode.
Right.
Which, I mean, FJ told us in the interview that we would really only see a couple actual full transformations.
Yes.
Charles, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this I like the escalation here. This episode ramps things up. I liked seeing Megatron and Ultra Magnus having a history, and we get some allusions to, like, there was some previous revolution where it feels like Prime, Megatron, and Ultra Magnus, they must have been veterans of a previous war, and then when they overthrew the old corrupt government, then they were, you know, trying to move forward, but then they had some kind of disagreement and they split, and that's where we get the Autobots and Decepticons now. So I like that, giving us the hint of a little backstory there, and Megatron and Ultra Magnus having, you know, a nice conversation across the table. It was just interesting to see that relationship there. And I do like the all the battles ramping up, and it just it kept pulling me in deeper, and it felt like also the you know, we get to the do we get to Shockwave in this episode, don't we, or is it so he's kind of the mad scientist pushing Megatron further than he's comfortable, but he keeps pushing him with these plans. And then Ultra Magnus kind of sparks he sets things off by giving that information back to the Autobots. So it's interesting how the dynamic, you know, maybe Megatron wouldn't have gone with Shockwave's plan if they hadn't sent the information to the Autobots. But it's just interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. All right. Episode 3 starts with Megatron basically giving a propaganda speech to the citizens of Cybertron, kind of saying that, you know, the Autobots killed Impactor, a loyal, you know, Cybertronian, you know, basically kind of completely painting it as, you know, as the Autobots were the aggressors and stuff. But then it goes from where you're kind of seeing Megatron give that speech to someone that's hearing the speech, and it turns out that's Ratchet, who is kind of going through the rubble of that area where the battle was, and he runs across Mirage, he runs across Impactor, and Impactor's not dead, so he takes Impactor back to this clinic that he has set up, and he treats, regardless of affiliation, he treats the people, and I thought that was really cool. In the arc, we see Prowl, and next to Alita One and Optimus Prime, Prowl looks really short. That's something I really just noticed that stood out. And the Decepticon side, Starscream is talking with the other Seekers outside of Jetfire, kind of complaining about Megatron, starting to conspire. And then Jetfire walks up and it's like basically calls him out on it. And Megatron shows up, and then Jetfire sends Starscream and the other Seekers out on patrol. And they make a joke about how Starscream is a tool, implying that, you know, a tool to be used, but it's also a tool. So I thought that was funny. On the Autobot side, we get more of kind of Alita trying to talk to Optimus, make him see how he is too singularly focused to see the big picture at this point. And then they go out in search of the Allspark. I believe that was what they were searching for. But we see Decepticon Mirage. And this is something that, you know, we've had the toy. People were always speculating about Mirage and what he's going to do. Essentially, Decepticon Mirage is just Mirage using his hologram technology. And if you've seen in the trailer where you have all the Autobots on spikes, that's kind of where he is talking with some Decepticons, trying, he's saying how they, he's looking for some Autobots, and the other Decepticons try to join in, and just, but seeing the, all the Autobots on spikes and stuff kind of breaks his mental concentration and his disguise starts to fail. Alita is covering him, or Chromia and Alita are both covering him. They both do not have stormtrooper aim. As snipers, they take out some of the Decepticons. There's a big battle. We see Reflector, which I'm sure is called Refractor in the show. Lots of repaints. Mirage can also use his holograms as kind of duplicates of himself. And you'll see, like, one of the Reflector bots crashes into one, and it just kind of breaks apart, you know, into a bunch of pieces like it was glass. But other times, they'll shoot weapons at the Decepticons, and it'll be like it actually hits and damages them. So I'm confused with exactly how Mirage's holograms work, but it's a nice modern take on this classic ability that he had. After the battle, the Autobots, like Wheeljack, leads them into Ratchet's. It's like a former theater, but it's where his clinic is. He's apparently a former weapons developer that now is using all of his abilities to heal instead of damage. See a lot more repaints that are all damaged. And then the Autobots are surprised to see Impactor. But Ratchet is like, this is a place where there are essentially no factions. He treats everyone. And then we go to the Decepticon base and we see Magnus being tortured by Shockwave. And the torture is brutal. It's like not a kid's show torture. But Magnus is like not giving up. And then after Megatron leaves with Jetfire, Magnus manages to break away and he starts to go after Megatron. But Megatron doesn't turn around and he knows that Magnus will not shoot him in the back. Magnus is recaptured, and I believe at the end, this is where Magnus is like, I'll tell you where the Autobot base is. If not here, I believe it's at the end of this episode, so you're led to believe Magnus turns. So that's roughly this episode. Oh, I remembered now what they were going for at the beginning. Wheeljack was telling them about the space bridge, and he knows he can't fix it, but he knows someone who can, which is Ratchet. Anyway, Charles, what were your thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I like so this is, again, we get some interesting new character dynamics with Ratchet being this, he's wearing an Autobot symbol, but he's definitely fed up with the war, and he's doing what he can to help people, and that's all he wants to do, and he doesn't care about factions or anything like that. So I like, this is Ratchet. This is a Ratchet who's really singularly focused on healing the sick, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a really interesting take on his character. And the fact that Impactor is a Decepticon, but when he's repaired, he has this devotion to Ratchet. I thought that was another really interesting take. Although, you know, we've never had Impactor be a Decepticon before. He's always been a Wrecker. So, but I do like I remember in the IDW comics, Impactor was a miner and he worked with Megatron, and they had they were friends before the war. So, you know, and this, I can see that turning into Impactor being loyal to Megatron and being a Decepticon. So I also liked, I know if you're diehard G1, you're going to complain about Mirage having Hound's hologram powers, but I think it still works. I think, yeah. You know, his
Mirage had that little box that went around him, right?
Yeah. He turned invisible. He didn't project holograms in G1. So, but his name Mirage is like, a hallucination.
You're seeing something that's not there.
Yeah. So I think it still works. And, you know, using his powers to pretend to be a Decepticon and then using it to project, you know, images of himself, that those are mirages, you know? So, revising that and giving those powers to him. And we get later on in the series, we get
we get another little mini arc with Mirage and Impactor. So going back to the toys with the whole, rivals, Impactor versus Mirage and the toy line. That was, that was a thing last year, and now they've incorporated that into, or they probably planned that for the show and then put that in the toy line or incorporated that into the toy line. So I think that'll be interesting. And I think the arc of the series just continued to get better each episode for me.
Well, Daryl, what are your thoughts on this?
I liked it. I definitely found that this is the episode where everything kind of slowed a bit after the excitement of 1 and 2. I loved the idea of Ratchet being this, this doctor for anybody, non-denominational doctor. And if you're in his care, there's no sides. You don't fight. Yeah. Everything's just being taken care of. And, and then if you are helped out, you owe him some time, I guess. So it's,
you're while you're there, you're also helping.
That's right. You're in.
It's kind of like what you see or you've heard like from various like war stories where a doctor from one side treats someone that he runs across that's would have been his enemy.
Well, that's the Hippocratic Oath, right? So,
right. Exactly.
I mean, you help who you got to help. So I like that a lot. And with regards to the rest of the story, I thought it was okay. It did okay. It definitely slowed. The pace of the show slowed dramatically for me at this point. I still appreciate the story beats. This was more of a, where's the next step going, and what are we doing with the rest of this thing? So I thought it was good. But I was much more interested in the action-packed aspect of the first couple.
All right. Well, before we wrap it up, what do you guys think about the intro? It's very different from any kind of intro we've had before. Where you're getting kind of a drawing, like a loose drawing of Cybertron with the different faction logos and some Cybertronian text. And it's kind of quick, but it's definitely just like a different Transformers intro than we've ever had.
I mean, it didn't grab me. Intros have become, I think, a little bit, I don't know. They've been de-emphasized with a lot of shows. Yeah. So, I mean, it's fine. It's not something that's really exciting for me. I like the old school, give us a little, a theme song and some action scenes or something. I mean, I know you can't use the old song just because there's tied up in rights,
yeah,
and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think the score that the music tracks that are really good in the show. But yeah, I would like a proper theme song. That would be fine. But
I guess that's what I was going for, the music as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Tron Legacy sounding to me.
Mm-hmm.
We went into that a little bit in the interview with FJ, but it's just synth heavy, futuristic sounding.
Yeah.
Daryl, you have any comments on the intro or the music?
I guess, I mean, until you mentioned it, I had forgotten the show even had an intro.
It was very short.
It was something that I really don't remember that much. And I mean, I know that we've got an interview that we're going to do with the guy responsible for the music. But I honestly watched it and I generally don't pay attention to the soundtrack that much. So I didn't really stick out to me. I really do have to watch it again and pay attention a little bit more closely to some of those more subtle aspects. Like I said, I watched it with my daughter. So she was asking me a bunch of questions about
honey, this is work.
No, I mean, and I told you guys what the main one was that she asked me, and I thought, you know what, that's a good question. But I mean, she asked, she said, all these Transformers, they have these these names for like time and like, astrosecond and stuff. Mm-hmm. But why do they call space the same as we do? Why is space still the same thing? Wouldn't they have a different name for space? I'm just like, well, yeah, probably they would. So good question. So I get a chance to talk to, FJ or one of the other writers of Transformers, why is space called space? You know, that's a human word.
All right, well, cool. I guess that will wrap up our first half of War for Cybertron Siege. We're all fairly optimistic and happy with what we have so far. So, anyone listening has seen it and want to give your comments, transmissionspodcast.com/feedback, voicemails, text, whatever. Just let us know what your thoughts are. Did you like the series? Do you think we're full of it and we aren't seeing what you're seeing? Let us know. Frankly, I'm just happy to have a Transformers series on TV that is more in the vein of like Transformers Prime, more kind of mature. And I think this is, you can tell the care that went into this. It is definitely not Combiner Wars.
No.
So we can all be happy about that. So that's our review.
All right. And we will move on to Transformers Media News.
All right, not a lot of media news this week, but a couple things to talk about. First one, we got a message from, the trading card game that was sent out in an email. The trading card game is making an announcement that the most recent wave, the Titan Masters Attack, will be the final release of the Transformers trading card game. And they stating that the distribution hasn't been as best as they could, as well as COVID-19 has kind of played a bit of a role in, the fact that they haven't been able to get players out to play the game and buy the cards. And they kind of depend on tournaments and, people playing the card game. So they have decided to shut the card game down. So it's done. It's over. If you've got cards out there, there's a lot of people looking for them. So if you're going to look to sell them now. If your store still has packs, buy them up because there's nothing else coming. But yeah, it's a bit of a sad day because the trading card game was doing quite well. They were bringing out sets and they were doing really well with the trading card game. And then all of a sudden, this pandemic hit. And I think it was directly pointed at the trading card game. They wanted to cancel the trading card game, and they did that. So, the trading card game is being shut down after Wave 5 of called Titan Masters Attack. So, that sucks. I know that none of us really played it. I bought a few packs, and I still have all my stuff from Wave 1. Yeah, I know, Charles, you were buying a little bit of stuff. Jeremy, you had bought a little bit of stuff. Is this, was it something you were still planning on getting into, or are you just kind of like passively kind of buying stuff if you saw it?
I kind of stopped buying stuff a while ago because I realized I still haven't played a game. So it's kind of not really worth it to buy the cards just for the art when I keep them in a box.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really played a game either, and I could tell the way they were putting out cards that it could quickly become a collector session hunt thing, and I just didn't want another thing to collect. So
yeah,
I bought the first starter pack. I bought the Metroplex version, and I got that special Omega Supreme card and that loot crate one time, and I pretty much stopped there.
I have seen that some fans have organized some kind of fan committee to kind of keep going with rules and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Oh yeah. I mean, just because the cards aren't being like new cards aren't being released doesn't mean you can't play the game anymore. All the stuff's out there.
And it stops working.
Yeah. You can't, I mean, the batteries die, right? No, I mean,
going to be like organizing play with stores and stuff, I think.
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, the stuff is still around. You can, like I said, if your store's still got packs, go in there, buy them all up. You know, your stores will be happy to sell them to you. I know that some stores even were selling singles of this stuff. So, I mean, go in there and buy all that stuff up. The stores will be happy to sell it, to you. You'll find that people will kind of have groups of this stuff kind of, I believe it was, the games. Some other games that are similar to this have kind of died off in the past. What's one that They've got, what is it, Marvel Champions? Is that one? They had the ones with the little minifigures that would kind of turn around and, you know, you turn the little power dice on them or whatever. I mean, those kind of things, you know, they had like DC kind of had them. I can't remember what that was called. Damn.
Heroclix,
yes. You know, that Heroclix has been dead for a while, but people still buy them. You know, I know that my store still has like a little bin of just like, you know, used Heroclix because, you know, you really don't need the card because the little dude is the whole thing. So you can go in and just buy some Heroclix. So, you know, the game is still going to be around. It's just not going to be getting anything new. So
it sounds like they had a bit of a failure of marketing because I saw like when they tweeted that, sorry, the game's shutting down and people were retweeting it and then people responded to the tweet like, there's a Transformers trading card game.
Right. And that's a problem, right? Obviously, if, you know, the game's been out for, what, 2 years? And it's gone into five waves plus, you know, so many different, you know, things. Either you're not penetrating far enough into the fandom to get to these people, or these particular fans aren't deep enough into the fandom to kind of see, right? Like the trading card game is everywhere in the stores that are selling it. And if you're a big enough fan of Transformers, you know that there's a trading card game out there. You know, we talk about it on our show. WTF at TFW has been huge on this thing, like right from the word go, to the point where they were getting exclusive, you know, interviews with the creators and stuff. So like they were doing a really good job on it. And I don't know what the other podcasts, the other Transformers ones were doing with the trading card game, but I think they were mentioning like the news topics and stuff. So it gets to a point where, yeah, if you hadn't heard of it, you probably weren't paying attention. But I think that there's a lot of like the problem that I found is that there wasn't enough people playing it. Yeah, there was a small group here in London, Dogcades, you know, here in London, he was playing it. And there was, you know, there was a small group of people that was playing it. But when you were into something like with me personally, because before I was into Magic the Gathering, and it was huge, right? There was a huge community in every city that was into this thing. And if you're playing games and you're trying to talk to people and your games and stuff are, you know, it's just growing, you need to try and find these communities that are, you know, a little bit bigger. It's tough to grow a game, and especially if you're competing in a market that has Magic the Gathering, it has Pokemon, it has Yu-Gi-Oh, it has all these other ones as well. And Transformers is a branded property, right? So we know how well it does in the comic book industry as well. So you're wanting to try and bring somebody over from Pokemon to Transformers, or somebody down from Magic to Transformers. From what I understand, the gameplay was quite well done. Like it was very, very cool to play, and the tactics and some of the abilities of the cards and stuff were probably much better than the game deserved. But it didn't find the audience that it really needed, and that's unfortunate.
Yep.
Anyway, we'll move on to another topic here, and a little bit more, you know, happy, I guess, is that we have an interview with our friend FJ DeSanto on Hasbro Pulse. So you can check that out. I mean, it's
a little
it's
short.
Not a, it's not a Transmissions interview with FJ DeSanto, but I mean, he did a little blurb with them. You know, it's cool, it's fun, but our interview,
he gave them a little taste, but he gave us the whole meal.
Right. You got to check out our interview because we talk with him for like an hour, so. It's yeah, it was fun. It was a good interview. Check out our interview and then see what Hasbro Pulse has and see if, I don't know.
I'd do the Hasbro one first.
If you're looking. I mean, if you're looking for anything extra, because, I mean, obviously the show's out and you've seen the show, so.
If you want the real scoop.
Yeah, you want some scoops, scoopity scoops, you listen and watch our interview.
And plus the Hasbro Pulse one doesn't have rapid fire.
Right. We got our rapid fire. We've got to put everybody through rapid fire. And lastly, on Monday, episode 18 of Cyberverse dropped on the Hasbro's YouTube channel. So remember, there's 26 episodes in this season. So we got 8 more to go and then we'll be able to
getting closer.
This is taking forever. So, yeah. Anyway, that's it for media news.
All right, and we will finish up the show with convention news.
Lots of Comic-Con at home news. First, we have the Rooster Teeth panel, which went over all the various Rooster Teeth properties, Red versus Blue, a bunch of other series. I'm not like RWBY, stuff like that. But we're concerned about the Transformers series, and FJ was on the panel, and he talked a little bit about the series, and then showed an exclusive clip, which hasn't been in any of the trailers that have been out. And this one features Cliffjumper, who the voice actor for Cliffjumper was one of the other guys on the panel. It was cool. It's a very short clip. You get to see, you know, Cliffjumper, which in just a short thing, just to kind of whet people's appetites for the series. And then we also have IDW had some panels, IDW in 2020 and beyond. And like I said earlier, this is a little awkward because it was obviously pre-recorded and Chris Ryle was on it talking about all these future projects. Now he's not there. It was interesting, the really short mentions of Transformers in it, but they are really happy still with the Brian Ruckley series. I think John Barber said that they're going to be meeting with Hasbro about future plans. And they say Hasbro has some really cool plans for where Transformers is going in the next few years. IDW is going to be pushing Transformers into directions that we haven't seen before to reach new audiences. So not sure what that's going to entail.
Top Gun.
What I would really like is like a separate all ages book, you know, geared towards younger audiences. Because I can't really give my 6-year old a comic book of Transformers right now. Do something more accessible, much like their Marvel Adventure line, Star Wars Adventure line. Do a Transformers Adventures line. I think that'd be cool, but that's just speculative. They talked about, they didn't mention this specifically with Transformers, but a lot of their series are starting to do Spanish language versions, like not going through what they've done in the past. I think with the Japanese version, with like another publisher does the translations, they're doing some Spanish language translations of their books in-house, and they're seeing success with that. And they're going to, you know, I think they're going to expand it to some other titles, but like I said, they didn't mention Transformers, but I can imagine that would probably be, you know, on the list. And that's pretty much what they covered relating to Transformers specifically. It was an interesting conversation, I thought, and lots of stuff with like Turtles and their other properties. The last panel, and I actually haven't watched this one yet, but The Science of Back to the Future. And John Barber was on that, as well as the artist. Oh, Kevin Scott, the writer on the Back to the Future book, and Juan Samu, who is the artist. It says Transformers and many other pop culture classics. I think he's the artist on the Transformers Back to the Future book. A number of science people. Sara Nadiri, who is outreach director at the a Data Science Institute at UC San Diego. Dr. Lisa Will, Fleet Science Center resident astronomer and professor of physics and astronomy at San Diego City College, and Andrea Decker, who is Fleet Science Center. She's the moderator of the panel. So they were talking more about actual time travel stuff too, and then Back to the Future, and then the book. So I will check out that panel, but from skimming through it, I'm not sure what, like how much they gave away in the story. And then we mentioned this in the toy show. Well, I mentioned it again here. Cybefest Northwest is happening this weekend, August 1st and 2nd. It will be from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on their Twitch channel. That's twitch.tv/CybFestNW. That's CYBFestNW. And Mike Cyber is hosting two panels. Saturday at 4 p.m., he has The Return of the Legacy of Transformers, the movie, that is talking about favorite memories of the movie and why it is still important. Sunday at 3 p.m., he's hosting an artist spotlight panel featuring Blackie Shepherd and Billy Montefort, who were the artists on Transformers issue 21 that we reviewed last week. And then he's also going to be emceeing the wrap-up panel with the show organizers at 4 p.m. on Sunday. That's awesome. I'm looking forward to watching some of these panels and just kind of experiencing Cybefest for the first time. That is all we got in convention news.
All right, and that will do it for this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode. thanks everyone for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Not really anything surprising. Transformers number 24 will be out in October. Transformers Galaxies number 7. Or not numbers. Why did I get that? It's number 12. Sorry about that. Put the wrong number in there.
Come on, man. Get it
Let
right.
Let me start that over.
It's definitely embargoed.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I keep forgetting. Keep forgetting. I'm going to slip up at some point. All right.